They may be called the next generation, but they're the church of today. Reach, disciple, and mobilize students to share the hope of the gospel. This is the Gen Send Podcast with Shane Pruitt, Paul Wooster, and Lacey Villa Sr.
Hey friends, welcome to another conversation on the Gen Send Podcast. I'm really pumped about this today as we talk about you need a mentor. We're going to have, I guess we can say guest, but he's now become pretty regular on the Gen Send Podcast and on the webinars. He serves as a journeyman on our team. You've probably met him out and about. He travels with me a lot. Evan Vela. A lot going on in Evan's life, you know, obviously he's a follower of Jesus, serves as a journeyman, but he's about to marry way, way over his head.
Amen.
His fiance Ezra, she said yes. And you only had to ask her six times and she finally said yes. Congratulations on that. So Evan, man, welcome. Lacey is here again, like always. Paul's here, like always. What's up, friends? How's everybody doing?
So good. So good. I'm so glad to be back on the Gen Send Podcast. I feel like, it's just family now. It's so cool. I feel like an honored guest. So thank you guys. I'm so pumped for this episode.
Absolutely, man. Well, hey, take about 30 seconds to a minute. I know you could talk this whole time about the greatness of your fiance, Ezra. Like I already said, you're marrying way over your head, but tell us a little bit about Ezra for the people who may have not heard about her or know her, met her yet.
Yeah, of course. She's going to hate me for this because if you knew her, she does not like this.
Yeah,
type of
share
attention,
her social media, everything.
I'll share her social, in general. But no, I'm going to start even from high school. She was prom queen, homecoming queen 2 years in a row. She's going to hate that I said that. Ooh. Captain of the cheerleading squad. But I met her in college. And so we met at A&M and then she studied marketing, killed it at the business school. And now she works for a company here in Rockwall. It's a marketing firm. And right now she is she just moved to that job, but she loves the Lord a ton, super, super creative. And Shane is completely right. I'm marrying way, way, way above my head. And so I'm glad to join that club. I'm
absolutely.
We should do an really episode good on that. We should do an episode on how to marry in way over your head.
Let's bring Ezra on for that.
Yes. I'll tell you, you got to make them laugh because then it's more of their time of their eyes being closed. So they don't have to look at you. So it's perfect. That's perfect. Just make them laugh.
Well, also Lacey, you're really good friends with Ezra. So you can testify. She's way too cool for Evan. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love you, Evan, but for sure.
No, agreed. Agreed. I'm there with you.
And yes, she's great. We're so excited. Actually, when this releases, I guess you guys will be like a month from getting married. So that's super exciting.
Yep.
And I just want you guys to know, or maybe Evan, I'll let you share. They're very cool, unique wedding plans. And so they are actually... Which if you know anybody who's gotten married recently, or maybe you have a daughter or son who's gotten married, you know, it's extremely expensive to get married. So they had the incredible idea. They're actually getting married in Italy. I don't know if you want to share anything about that.
Yeah. So that sounds super impressive and super bougie. But let me tell you guys, we were projecting to do like a 250 person wedding in Dallas. And that was about $80,000 to $90,000. And so we were like, we're not doing that. But Italy there's going to be about 40 people there. And it is not even comparable when it comes to the cost. And we're covering some people's flights and we're covering all the housing and all that. So we're super excited. Shane's actually marrying us, which I'm super pumped about. And so, Shane, I'm giving you an hour and a half for that ceremony. So
perfect, man. I think I can squeeze that in.
That's just for the invitation side.
And let's just to clarify, we're talking about real Italy, not Italy, Texas, because there is one of those, you know?
Yes. We're getting married in the hills of Tuscany. So
yeah,
sounds romantic, is romantic. Well, Ezra's idea. She's the best.
Well, we'll go suffer for the Lord together there.
You know? Got to. We've got to. That's awesome. Yeah. Awesome.
Paul, how are you doing, my friend? Good seeing you, Paul.
Doing good, man. Doing great. Yeah.
Well, I'm super excited about today's episode. And part of the reason we have Evan on is because we're talking about mentorship. And I know it's going to be a really good conversation and just getting to even dive into a little bit of him and Shane's relationship and how that's played out. But I know this has had a huge impact on my own faith journey, especially in high school. I had a family that just welcomed me into their life and family. And through that really showed me what a godly marriage and family and life looks like, just because I didn't have that example in my own life. And yeah, the husband of that family married my husband and I, and they have just had immeasurable impact on me and a huge part of my spiritual growth and maturity and all of that. And even to this day, still consider them like second, definitely like spiritual parents in my life. And so I've seen firsthand how vital mentorship is and how impactful it can be. So I'm excited to talk about this. So let's just start since we have Evan on. Evan, you spent the last, I think it's 2 years with Shane.
Yeah, coming up on 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah. What has that been like? How has it grown you spiritually and even as a leader and maybe some other aspects?
Honestly, it is immeasurable. Like you said, you're so right when it comes to mentorship. If you guys are listening and you guys are either in the mentor position or in the mentee position, I cannot emphasize enough the potential life impact and life-altering impact that you can have on a person or someone can have on you that's just maybe a few years older than you, a few years down the road, has experience you don't have. And with Shane and Paul both, it has truly revolutionized my faith. I'm a big reader just in general, so I try super hard to read the word and try to know it well. But there is nothing like having, I don't know if anyone's heard of this resource. It's gotquestions.org. They have like hundreds of thousands of answers to questions. It is nothing like having a gotquestions.org in the truck with you. Just ask Shane. You can ask Paul, hey, what the heck does this mean? Or hey, leadership wise, what should I do? How should I handle this situation? And to have men in my life who are a few years older than me, just a few. You guys are pushing 30. Yeah, I know.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate that. Just a few.
Yeah. And a lot more wisdom than I have. It truly is vital. The walk of Christianity is not meant to be done alone. And we see it modeled for us in the scriptures. You know, you have Timothy and Paul's, you know, so there are a couple of Paul's here on this podcast for me. And it literally have changed my walk with the Lord. So it's everything. Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. And hey, Evan, again, thanks for saying just a few, because when Lacey refers to Paul now, she'll be like, you know, quite a bit or a lot.
I was going to say, find a senior saint like Paul or Shane.
Yeah. We need one of y'all to bring us up and then the other one.
Yeah, we're good cop, bad cop. Good cop, bad cop.
So my husband is, he's only 4 years older than me, but he's turning 30 this year. And he is really he gets annoyed with me because I'm like, oh, you're coming up on 30. I'm making a really big deal about it and having a little bit of a midlife an early midlife crisis. So
midlife, but yeah.
I've started to give him a hard time now, so I'm shifting to
no, that's good. Yeah, take it out on Paul and Shane.
Shane, now let me ask you, what has this been like for you? What are some things that are important to a mentor relationship? Just talk to us a little bit about these last couple of years.
Yeah, I've loved it. I love our journeyman program at NAM. And if you're more interested in that, I would encourage you to get on NAM.net and check that out. Because I love it. Because I'll just be honest, transparent. That kind of life on life, doing journeying with someone, was really one of the things I miss most about not serving, you know, as a pastor or support staff in a local church. Because whenever I was a youth pastor, I was always doing that. Had a group of people that I was pouring into, life on life, traveling with me, spending time with me, coming over to our house, hanging out with Casey and the kids. Same thing whenever I was a lead pastor of C3. Same thing, constantly journeying with people, discipleship. And so then whenever I started more in the ministry, kind of like what we're doing now and traveling and working with pastors and leaders, and we get to coach leaders, and that's awesome, pouring the leaders. But I'm talking about that life on life discipleship. I was really missing that. And so I love our journeyman program, love spending the last 2 years with Evan. It's been fun journeying with him. And really the way that I approach it is really, I think when we do it our best is when we're, whether we call it a mentor or a disciple maker in our life, is really when that disciple maker or mentor is exposing the person that they're mentoring or discipling to every area of their life. And so really there's kind of four places that I really want to expose people to that I'm mentoring or discipling. Number one, obviously, that's teaching them how to follow and walk deeply with Jesus. Now, mm-hmm. I think what you do is like every person's different. So see where that person is. Like Evan, for example, Evan, man, he is a sponge. He's just consumes like podcasts, books, sermons. And so I'll just be honest. There's more often that he's sharing podcast episodes with me or sermons with me than vice versa. Right. Nice. So that's I'm awesome. Not having to tell Evan, hey, let's read this book together. Really, he's doing that on his own. So the conversation changes. Instead of saying, hey, let's read this book together or let's study this book in the Bible together, it's, hey, what are you reading right now? Mm-hmm. What are you listening to right now? Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how that impacts our life. Let's talk about where areas where we agree with that or maybe areas we disagree with it. So if you're discipling somebody who's not a reader, they're not a listener, you may have to hold their hand in that. And mm-hmm. that's okay to start that. But if someone's already just consuming content, then talk about that, you know, and you don't have to, you know, take time to go, all right, we're going to read this together, listen to this together. Now, Evan and I do that some because Evan will go, hey, I want you to listen to a sermon or I heard this podcast episode. Let's listen to it together. And we do that, you know, in the truck or at the airport, and we'll do that. So walking deeply with Jesus. The second one is how I lead my family. So here's something real practical. If we're in the truck and Casey calls, it's on Bluetooth. I don't take it off of Bluetooth. So Evan's hearing how I talk to Casey. Evan's hearing how I tuck my kids at night over the phone. Evan's hearing about Reagan or Harper talking about the wins of their day or their struggles of that day. I'm exposed. Now, there's times where maybe Casey's like, hey, I need to talk to you about something personal or whatever. I'll take it off, honor that, obviously. But when that everyday conversation, I'm just exposing Evan to every area of that. So he's hearing how I'm talking to my wife. He's hearing how I'm talking to my kids. Because guess what? He's about to have a wife. And then if the Lord sees fit, he's going to have kids. So we expose them to every area of our family as well. The third thing is how we minister to leaders and others. And so not just on a stage, but I'm talking about at the restaurant afterward, when we're sitting in a room after, when we're sitting in the chairs, is that's why I always love, like, hey, it's not just like, hey, let's schedule meetings, but come do this life with me. Come do ministry with me, because now you're getting to see firsthand. Yes, podcasts are great. Books are great. Classroom settings are great, but there's no kind of learning like doing it in life. And so he's getting to hear how we talk, you know, how I talk to pastors or youth pastors, collegiate leaders, over breakfast, over lunch, over dinner, how we interact with students who are coming up. He's a part of all that. And then the fourth aspect is how we live everyday life, you know? And so, so Evan's getting to see it all, you know, like, How are we walking around the mall? You know, Evan and I love, Evan, I'll just share our secrets. A lot of times when we're on the road and we have a little gap, we love to hit antique stores. We love to hit vintage shops. So just seeing, like, how do we live everyday life to go, it's okay to have fun. It's okay to laugh, you know, and there's going to be times where you go, oh man, you know what? That was a win because we got in a gospel conversation with our waiter or waitress, or we prayed with them, or they're seeing, for lack of a better term, failures to go, oh, we probably just missed that gospel opportunity, you know, and he's getting to see it all. So I think when we're mentoring somebody, discipling people, just expose them to every area of your life, because that's what they're going to do, is live life. So help them live life following Jesus, you know?
Yeah. If I could add just one thing super quick, a couple of thoughts. One, I've never had a mentor or someone who's discipling me who's invited me into the second point that he made, when it's like when Casey calls him and he puts it on Bluetooth. For y'all that might not know Shane and his family's full story, they've lost a son recently, and he did not have to include me in those conversations after that, of grieving, of hardships, of struggles, but he did. And he let me see what it looks like to faithfully walk with Jesus. And it is one of those things that that's more liquid gold than sitting across from each other, walking through mere Christianity, which sounds great, but it is nothing comparable to, because now I have words, I have actions to base my life off of, because I've seen it modeled for me through Shane. He's been one of the best people I've ever seen that does not waste a heartache, does not waste a hardship. He allows the people around him to walk through it with him when he literally doesn't have to. And when a mentor and boss does something like that, that's a mentor or boss or disciple maker that I would literally follow into the gates of hell trying to push back darkness. I just want to high honor you in that, because it is it is something that I'll keep with literally the rest of my life. It's meant so much to me as a mentee.
Well, to God be the glory. That's kind. You're about to make me cry over here, Evan.
Dude, yes. And I would second and say amen to that, Evan. Just seeing Shane walk through this season is just incredible, and how real and other-centered you've been, man. And so, yeah, the more I've gotten to know Shane and the whole team, it's like the more I love what we get to do together. But this highlights this idea of authenticity, is bringing people into your life, even if it's messy. Actually, like, our house isn't always perfectly spotless and Pinterest worthy or whatever, and our kids aren't always perfect little angels, you know. And or sometimes, actually, some of my most like life-changing discipleship has been having an argument with my wife in front of the guy that I'm discipling. And here's why. He heard us get into it a little bit, little tiff. It wasn't anything major. Mm-hmm. But then 5 minutes later, I come back and I apologize, and I clear up that relationship. And some people have never seen, they've grown up their whole life and they've never seen a man apologize. They've never seen someone take that repentance. And so actually people are impressed by our strengths, but they're encouraged and inspired. They're encouraged by our weaknesses. And so sometimes we don't have to put on this facade of, oh, we got all of our stuff together. We take advantage of every gospel, every waiter. Believe it or not, Shane and I don't witness to every single waiter. You know, we wish we have room. Catherine Renfro.
She does.
But yeah. There's room to grow. And being real is better than just being perfect all the time. So I think letting people in, even when it's a little messy or imperfect, is actually one of the secret sauces of mentorship.
So true.
Yeah,
so
totally true. Agree with that. I mean, yeah, the family that mentored me, I had never seen a godly marriage. I'd never seen a godly even parenting style. And that was so vital. Like you said, seeing them argue, seeing them discipline their kids. I mean, they let me into all of it, and they really had an open door policy. And I took advantage. I was there every day after school, you know, until late at night. And so that, and a lot of times we complicate mentorship a little bit, but it really is just letting them see everything and letting them live life alongside you and get a peek into that. And yeah, maybe you have some things along the way, but naturally I think you have spiritual conversations, you discuss things, you learn things if you're living life with that person and living life together. But it does take, on the mentor side, a lot of sacrifice and a lot of willingness to be authentic and open, which can be hard, but I think can also benefit the leader in the sense of like, hey, you have a really high level of accountability here because you have somebody who has seen everything depending on how much you let them in. And so I think there's even a piece of that, you know, we often hear about all these different, you know, moral failures or whatever in the ministry world that can be really difficult. And I think some of that is, could be, you know, not all of it could, but could be avoided with like, hey, who do you have that, yeah, is looking at your life, who is seeing everything? One, that benefits them, hopefully, if you're living as a godly person and have a high level of spiritual maturity, but it also, you know, can benefit the person mentoring because they're seeing everything and there's some accountability there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always say this in my trainings, but you don't want to become so much of a leader that you stop being a laborer for the gospel.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love
that.
Like
you can kind of hide behind your role or I got to preach or I got to do these meetings and not let your life on life discipleship, your most effective discipleship and leadership development tool is your dining room table. If you're bringing people in and having them in your life, that is probably one of your most effective tools for discipleship. And so that there's a lot there.
Yeah. I've briefly talked about obviously the impact this has had on me, but why do y'all think mentorship is so important to someone's faith and even leadership? And what has been your experience with this, Shane and Paul, even in your own lives?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Most people have gone through, even grown up in church, their whole church experience, and they've never had someone personally take interest in them. And so it can be, and to be honest, a lot of people, even their parents, weren't godly or didn't really mentor them in the era. Even if they were personally had a faith, they didn't really pass that on to their children in the way we're called to as parents. And so I've been able to play a spiritual father role in many young men's lives just by leaning in. And it doesn't even seem like a lot on my end, but it's been meant the world to them by me spending a little relational time with them and intentional. So the best kind of mentoring is intentional, relational, and reproducible. So it's simple enough that they could do it with someone else. But I mean, when I look back on my life, I've read thousands of books, a lot of books. I love reading. But the mentors, I've had a few mentors in my life that have actually, I've kind of collected them over the years, you know, and 40 now. So it's been like 20 years since I really got on fire for the Lord, but I've collected different mentors over the years. And those kind of can be like markers in my spiritual journey. And I think God brings different mentors in our lives for different seasons of our lives as well. And, but always be on the lookout. And that one mentor would be way more important than hundreds of books. So,
Yeah. I love that, Paul. And I think, you know, cause yours and I's the guys who kind of impacted us the most and the earliest outside of our parents were really older. And I mean, quite a bit older, like disciple makers and mentors in our life. And I think one thing it probably kind of ingrained in us, so we didn't even realize it, is it also taught us how to interact with older people. Because, you know, now, like, cause I look at Paul, like how many older statesmen who have been faithful for serving the Lord for decades upon decades upon decades, the way they look at you and respect you and trust you, you know, and some of my favorite leaders to be around are guys that are in their, you know, 70s and 80s, you know, just have faithfully served the Lord well. And some of that might be because the one who discipled me was in his late 60s to early 70s during the time he poured into me, and I was 21. And this is where I think it's just a great reminder of, Lacey, what you talked about a while ago, of just being the real, the authentic, letting them see, you know, the good days, the difficult days, letting them just see it all, is because him and I were so different, and I didn't care, you know, for him to be cool, you know, and we say this all the time. I believe young people, they're not looking for cool leaders to follow. They're looking just for real authentic ones. And so, like, I've talked about Brother Carr in my life and how important he's been to me. And we couldn't have been more different. You know, I am a jeans and sneaker person. He was, like I've said before, he wore pleated Dockers dress pants every day. Like, I think he mowed his yard in those things. You know what I mean? Like, we couldn't have been more different. And God saved me out of a party lifestyle. True story. Brother Ivan Carr in his late 60s, early 70s, never drank a drop of alcohol. You know, like, we couldn't have been more different. I would say things and talk about things he had no clue what I was talking about. And he would talk about things and say things I had no clue what he was talking about. But I could tell he loved me. He cared about me. And especially when God saved me, because all my old friends were all partiers. And so I just wanted to spend time with him, not even necessarily because I felt called to the ministry at that time. More than anything, I just wanted to spend time with him and learn from him. And he did the same thing. Like, he'd go, "Hey, I'm going to the hospital to visit people." And he wasn't saying, "Hey, come with me, because I know you're going to be a preacher boy. You need to learn how to do this." No, he said, "Come with me, because I want you to come with me." And I went with him because I wanted to be with him, you know. And I just, more than anything, I just wanted to learn how to follow Jesus. And so I knew he was doing that. So I wanted to learn from him. And he exposed me to every area of his life. And so I think he helped teach me how to be a follower of Jesus, how to be a husband, how to be a father, how to be a leader. And I was learning all those things probably without even really intentionally seeking to learn those things, you know.
Good. That's awesome. I was just going to say this. This is free. I just, because I keep seeing this theme just throughout the whole conversation, because I imagine there's probably some leaders in this listening to this podcast right now that are saying, you guys have no idea what my schedule looks like.
Yeah.
You have no idea how busy I am. To add an extra student in or to add three students in, I literally don't have the margin to get an hour to 2 hour coffee once a week with a student. Greatest principle that I learned in college from actually a mentor of mine, but I see these two people, Shane and Paul, and Lacey does this super well as well, is instead of making time for people by trying to add them on top of your schedule, just invite them into your schedule. And so that's like super helpful with Shane, with Paul. Shane has done the same thing with me where he's like, hey, I'm going to do this. Come with me. I'm going to this lunch with this leader. Come with me. And so it's kind of like a kill two birds with one stone thing. It's you get to finish your schedule as well as having a mentee, you know, a Timothy, having someone who you're discipling alongside with you watching. One of the wisest things Shane told me, which was growing for me, because I really, at the time, I was like, this is so hard. But one of the most growing things Shane had told me was when we were on the Winter Jam tour, it was the very first time I had pretty much ever traveled with him. And he goes, listen, you are going to get out of this as much as you want to get out of it. I'm not going to take the time and take you aside and say, hey, notice when I did this, this, and this. Did you notice those things? And he does do those things as well, but he goes, watch me. And if you're paying attention, you'll learn. But if you don't pay attention, you won't. So you'll get out of this as much as you want to. And so it has been the greatest thing because it has made me a better listener. It's made me more observant and it's made me have to lean in even more. And I'm just seeing all the details of truly how wise Shane is. So that's for the listener who's like, man, I've got such a packed schedule. Instead of trying to add people on top of your schedule, just invite them in. Just invite them in.
Good one. Yeah, that's a good reminder. Yeah, and I mean, this really can be one of the most difficult things to program, for lack of a better word, because a huge piece of mentoring is just like the natural chemistry between two people. And the person, yeah, does have to, you know, it has to be mutual. The mentee really needs to want it and pursue it and make it a priority as much as the mentor. And so what are some do's and don'ts for those looking for a mentor? Is there anything that ministries can do to kind of help students get connected to somebody or foster this?
Yeah, and it's exactly what Evan just said about like not adding another thing to your calendar. We're all stretched, we're all busy, but it's inviting people into your calendar. And if you'll notice, that's exactly what Jesus did. Evan, as you were talking about that, I was like, that's what Jesus did. Because if you think about it, like Jesus, he tells us himself why he came to earth, right? He goes, I came to seek and save the lost. He came to preach the kingdom. He came, right, to glorify his Father. So when he invited the disciples to follow him, here's the deal. Jesus was going to do those things with or without those guys, right? Because if you remember, how many times did they try to distract Jesus to do other things? And no, he was laser focused. So he is like, I'm coming to glorify my God, Father. I'm coming to preach the kingdom. I'm coming to seek and save the lost. Now, what he did was go, while I'm doing that, hey guys, come and follow me. And I'm going to teach you what I'm doing. And that's all Jesus did. He just added them. Now, here is the principle I think we can learn from the disciples, especially I think as we flip the script to go, all right, hey, I want to be mentored. I want to be discipled. Well, notice what the disciples did. They sacrificed a lot because Jesus said, come and follow me. What did they do? They dropped their nets, right? Matthew left his job of being a tax collector. So what I meant is like they were like, I want to learn, so I'm doing it on their term, my terms. Because here's typically what happens, right? Let's just be honest. If we're not careful, we can be really entitled. So we'll go, hey, would you mentor me, but it has to be on Tuesdays from 3:58 p.m. to like 4:05 p.m. Right. And they're like, no, I can't do that. And they're like, well, see, nobody wants to mentor me. Nobody wants to disciple me. And so there comes a lot of entitlement. No, no, no. Like, you join, let them dictate, and go be a part of what they're doing. That's what the disciples did. Jesus was doing those things. So they went. And so I would say, like, hey, we're going to have to lay down some of our entitlement and go, yes, I want to be discipled, but it has to be this day, this time. No, no, no. Like, we're going to have to, like, lay some things down. You know, I think that's even why Jesus said, hey, if you want to come follow me, you must deny yourself, pick up your cross and follow me. So if this is really important, then it's got to be really important. Because here's what I found. We're all busy, but we make time for the things that are most important to us. And so I would say, I think a lot of times when we think of busyness, we kind of put it on the discipler or the mentor going, they're really busy. And that's true, they are. But I think sometimes if we're not careful as the disciplee or the mentoree, we are a little entitled going, well, I want to be disciple, but it's got to fit in this little box or sliver of my life. And we're going to have to lay that mindset down. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And I think maybe the potential biggest impact of this podcast is for our ministry leaders that are listening, is the title of the podcast is You Need a Mentor. And so if you're, even if you're in your 30s, 40s, whatever it may be, and you've got a few years of ministry, it's easy to get to that level and be like, well, I kind of figured this out a little bit. That is a very, that is a very dangerous place to be. And so by the grace of God, God's brought me, brought different mentors in my life that are in their 70s or have started multiple organizations, or they're kind of at that next level that I want to get to. And those type of people aren't just going to like pursue you most of the time. You are going to have to be the one that has, hey, can I set up some time with you? And I have a list of questions and when could work with for you. Oh, 6 a.m. Yeah, I'll be there. 5 a.m. I'll be there. Get to there, you know, before work and before they're heading off. You take the initiative and you, like, if you want to be mentored, come with some good questions. And then when they say, hey, read this book, like the next week or the 2 weeks later, be like, message them again, text them again. Hey, I read that book. Like, here's some questions that came up for me. Like, what do you think about this issue? And they're like, any hot top level leader, they love a hungry person. A teachable person is like, they love to have that kind of person around. And so if you want to be mentored by the best, you got to be like the most teachable person in the room. Actually, some of the best leaders I've been around, and if I mention their names, you would know who they were. They are the most teachable people. They come up to people that, like, they're asking advice of others. It's like, they're here and like, they come to me and they're like, hey, what's some good books on revival and all this stuff? I'm like, dude, I need to be asking you about that. Mm-hmm. And so usually the best leaders are also the most teachable leaders as well.
Yeah, Paul. And I love that, just as a good reminder, when you were talking about that, it reminded me of something I heard John Maxwell say, like the best leaders never stop being, you know, followers. The best teachers never stop being students. And so he was like saying at all times we should have three people in our life, at least three people. He said a Paul, somebody pouring into us, a Timothy, somebody we're pouring into, and then a Barnabas, somebody running us alongside of us, encouraging us. And I'm like, so I think I constantly, I'm asking myself, who are those three people for me? A Paul pouring into me, a Timothy that I'm pouring into, and a Barnabas running alongside me, encouraging me. Yeah.
That's good.
That's really good. Yeah. That is, I think especially we can be really good at one of those, but yeah, we end up neglecting another, you know, aspect of those relationships. So that's such a good reminder. And maybe if you're listening, maybe you need to pause and just think about that or pray about that or write some names down just to kind of evaluate that. I would love to flip it. And Evan, maybe you can even jump in on things that I know you've mentioned something Shane has done well, but what are some do's and don'ts for those who are actually doing the mentoring?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. I think from the mentee's perspective, I think sometimes the hardest thing is let your yeses be yes. And so it kind of goes both ways. If it's like, hey, we are going to meet this day at this time, unless there's some sort of emergency, we always talk about it from the mentee's side. But if the mentor, that can take the wind out of the sails of that mentee so quickly, because it's probably already a little bit more of a rocky relationship. In the sense of the mentees probably, even in the back of their head, they might be thinking, man, I'm wasting this guy's time. He could be doing something so much better because he is a high profile, high capacity leader, and he's taking time out of his day to come meet with me. He probably is doing it more as a favor, you know, whatever, right? Those lies from the enemy that are going through your head. When it's something like that, and then the mentor actually cancels or reschedules or something like that, that can totally take the wind out of the sails of that student. Because one thing that we have to remember as mentors, as Paul's, man, those students, those people around you, they look up to you. They love you. They want so badly to be close to you. And so that's probably a big reason why they're asking to meet with you or to be discipled by you. And so kind of the last thing we want to do is not let our yes be yes. And sometimes we can totally overcommit, and I get that. But if you say yes to meeting with a student, or if you say yes to discipling the student, try your absolute hardest to keep that yes, because that can be really demoralizing for someone who probably looks up to you a lot, and you don't get to follow through with that maybe. That's probably where I'd start. What do you think, Shane?
Yeah, that's a great word. That's great. Oh, man. No, I'm just over here reflecting, going, man, have I had... How many times have I reschedule?
Yeah, no, that's why I said,
just over here
said,
under conviction. What do you
think?
All, you know?
What do you think, Shane?
No.
What about last Tuesday? No, I'm just kidding.
No, I think you're tapping into something wise, Evan. Right. Is like we do need to create realistic expectations with those we mentor. We're not, discipleship isn't exactly like Obi-Wan Kenobi. You know, it's not exactly like you're gonna do every single thing together. And it's better to under promise and over deliver. So it's better to say, hey, let's spend some time together. I'd love to mentor you and help you or disciple you and help you grow. But, you know, and give them like a realistic expectation of what it looks like, and then do more than that. But if you're doing the reverse and you're like building this up to this huge thing, and then they're like, oh, this is it. This is, you know, and actually it's okay to have different levels of the amount of time you spend with different people. So some people you might spend more time with, others you might just do the once a week and see how it's going, how teachable they are. And so you kind of like don't have to use the same amount of energy and time with every single person. So that's like a hack that's been a game changer for me, because I can kind of like just give there's one person that's like, it's more than enough to spend like an hour a week with them. And they seem to be like, that's really helping them, and that's all they really want. And then there's others I can kind of like bring into more life on life, if that makes sense. So,
yeah, no, that's good. No, I agree with all that. I think those are great points. And the only thing I would just add is, and I just keep thinking of 1 Corinthians 11:1, where Paul says, imitate me as I imitate the Lord. And then, you know, a lot of times I think of the first part when you're discipling people, imitate me, but then kind of neglect the second part, as I imitate the Lord, or as I imitate Christ, depending on what translation you look at. And so I think even as leaders, when we are discipling people or mentoring people, to truly go, man, are we walking deeply with Jesus? Because I'll be honest, I'll be transparent. When there's times that I'm not walking deeply with Jesus or imitating Christ or walking in intimacy with Christ, I don't want people to imitate me. You know what I mean? Like, I only want you to imitate me when I am imitating Christ and walking deeply with Christ. And so I think it's a good reminder. Like, if we're running on empty, if we're on the edge of burnout, if we're not walking with deeply with Jesus, that's going to affect those who we disciple. And so we do want to imitate the Lord, so we can, with a clear conscience, say, imitate me as I imitate the Lord. But even in that train of that of thought that Paul's writing there, when he writes it to the church at Corinth, even the ultimate goal, when he goes, imitate me as I imitate the Lord, really the ultimate goal is you want them to imitate the Lord. So I think that's a good reminder too. And because I have certain preferences, opinions, thoughts But that doesn't mean Evan has to have those preferences, opinions, and thoughts. You know, the ultimate goal is to help them be more like Jesus, not more like you. And I think a lot of times we need to be reminded of that, if I be honest, as mentors or disciple makers, is we're not trying to create little mini-me's. You know, it's not mini-me. We want them to imitate Christ. And so, you know what? If Evan disagrees with me on something, that's okay. If Evan likes a different genre of music, that's okay. You know, if Evan thinks, you know, the clothes I'm wearing that day are cringy, that's okay. Cause I think you know what I mean? Like they don't have to imitate your preferences and opinions. You want them to be more like Jesus. That's
so good. That's so good. I agree with that. I love that.
That is really good. Yeah. I was recently reading in Barna, just about the impact that a meaningful relationship can have on kids if they have a meaningful relationship with one adult in the church. And they took this data, and this is from ages a little bit younger, ages kids 5 to 14 years old. And they asked these parents, they surveyed them, whether or not their children integrates biblical principles into their lives. And 64% of parents who said yes, they do that, it was those kids, they had at least one adult that they had a meaningful relationship with in church. Now, on the other side, when they asked if, you know, if the kids had a relationship and they said no, only 24% said that their kids are integrating biblical principles into their life. And so that was a pretty big gap of just, and obviously these parents who are participating in this study are Christian parents, but what mattered was having that adult relationship outside of them with somebody at church. And my guess is just that that gap continues to grow as somebody's age increases, especially, you know, we've mentioned in the past a little bit, the gaps in student ministry, kind of when students walk away from the faith or stop walking with the Lord. And so I think this can even be a piece of trying to close that gap. But, you know, Shane, Paul, your parents, how can parents help and encourage their student or their kids to pursue mentorship?
Yeah, I think as parents, we have to make it a high priority, because if I just be honest, and I say this as a parent, all right, so I'll take my pastor hat off for a minute and be a parent, is like, it's hard. I mean, we have 5 kids. We have 2 musicians. We have a little tumbler. And then we have 2 that play club sports. So we're straight. And here's the deal is if we as parents, because it's ultimately us who are dictating those schedules, we overpack their schedules to where they have no margin for that, then that's on us. And so we have to like go, all right, what is the most important thing? Because at the end of the day, our kids will draw their last breath. And I think we know as parents that one day we will stand before the Lord and give an account, but we don't think about our kids having to stand before the Lord and give an account. And at the end of the day, when they stand before Jesus, he probably won't care much about their GPA and their batting average and their yards per carry or how much they can bench press or how popular they were. I'm not saying any of that's bad, but what he cares about is their soul. So how are we investing in their soul? And to go, hey, man, when I'm involving other healthy, spiritually mature adults in their life, that's investing in their soul. And so the last thing I'll share is this, and this comes from Richard Ross. So Dr. Richard Ross is a professor at Southwestern Seminary. He's written a lot of books. Most people call him the father of youth ministry. Just a living legend. So one day him and I were on a panel and it was speaking to a bunch of leaders, and it was mainly youth pastors in this particular room. And so I think a question comes up, hey, in a healthy atmosphere, and it was in this line, Lacey, of adults investing in students, what should be our adult to student ratio? What should be our adult to student ratio? And they're like, is that, you know, 1 to 5, 1 to 10, you know, 1 to 15? And he said, 1 to 5. And they were like, whoa, like that's nearly impossible. How in the world are we going to have 1 adult for every 5 students? And they're like, and he goes, no, 5 adults for every 1 student. Whoa. And here's what he meant. Every student needs to have their 2 parents involved, you know, if they, you know, have godly parents and they're together. So that's 2 parents, a youth pastor, a small group leader, and then somebody discipling him. So he was all like, not 1, you know, a student for, you know, or not, you know, 1 adult for 5 students. No, every student needs at least 5 adults at minimum investing in them, involved in them. And that's how we see them grow spiritually. And that's the sticking power. We found that they move through the transitions of ministries in a church. The more relationships they have, the more smoothly they move through those. So really 5 adults for every 1 student, the 2 parents, the youth pastor, small group leader, and somebody discipling them. And I would say it should be probably the same in collegiate ministry as well. It's going to have some different aspects as they've gotten older, but the more involved, the better for sure.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so the angle I'm kind of thinking about it is from the ministry leader's perspective and even thinking about our own kids. And I love, actually, it's kind of been a, not a really an intentional thing, but it's been amazing to see the college students and young adults that Christy and I are mentoring have built friendships with our own kids. And so I can think about even right now in Hawaii, there's a girl that Christy disciples named Grace, and Evelyn, our daughter's 9 years old. She thinks Grace is like the coolest thing, coolest person in the world. She like follows around and like asks her questions, and Grace is so kind and loving and all that. And so it's just really cool to see that's an advantage of ministry leadership is that if we can bring even, you know, it doesn't have to be a full grown adult. It can be youth or college students that are on fire for the Lord, exposing your own kids to those people that are just like a couple stages ahead of them. That can mean a lot. That could be, and even my son, he's 13. He's like, oh, I think we're doing discipleship stuff with students. He's like, I want to do discipleship when I'm, you know, a young adult. And I'm like, well, you can do it now, you know. It's like, so it's just super cool to see that's one of the advantages of ministry. If you really bring people into your life and let your family be a part of the ministry as well. So.
Yeah. I think another piece of it that I've seen, just my husband's a pastor, and what I've seen within the families of our church is sometimes, you know, parents will come up to us and whether their child has walked away from the faith or they're just really struggling with them. And what's interesting is a lot of times it's, oh, you know, what can I do to help my kid come back to the Lord? How can I help them pursue the Lord better or whatever it is, but they are only at church once every 2 months, or, you know, like you said, Shane, they have filled their student or kid's schedule with all these other things. And, you know, you have to gently say, well, hey, let's just start with being consistent, creating rhythms and margins for your student or for your kid to meet other godly people and bring them into, you know, be consistent at your local church, be plugged in. And that's because naturally that's how relationships are going to be built. That's how they're going to begin to trust people and open up with other people, is just consistency, consistently seeing them, consistently hanging out with them, making sure that they're involved in their, you know, student ministry or college ministry, whatever it is. And so sometimes we just need to start even just there, I think.
Yeah, it's great.
I don't know, Evan, if I know you're not a parent, obviously neither of us are, but is there anything you would kind of add here or something that you've seen?
Yeah, I think there's an old leadership principle. It's the people with the best stories always win. And it's one of those things that as a parent, one thing my parents always did for us as their children is, we were constantly hearing stories of the Lord's faithfulness in their life. From the time I was like literally 3, a little background, I was 4 years old. My dad was the second diagnosed case of SARS-CoV-1 when it was the bird flu in 2003. And the mortality rate for that COVID back in 2003 was a lot steeper than the one in 2020. And my dad was in a medically induced coma for 18 days. His organs were shutting down. They were getting a body bag ready for him. And we went into the room to say bye to him. Still remember he had lost about 60 pounds. It was kind of scary to see him because he didn't look like himself at all. But the Lord miraculously, and I mean miraculously, healed him. And the doctor, an atheist at the time, was just shaking his head, looking at the monitors, and was like, I don't know what happened, but the God y'all have been praying to saved his life, because I can't think of any other reason why this man isn't dead. And so yes, I was young, but hearing the testimony of that story, being able to recite it from memory, being able to tell is shows this the faithfulness of my parents, always pointing everything back to the Lord. My mom is the first person, if something good happens in my life, she's the first person to tell me, praise the Lord. Like, that is all him. That's his faithfulness. And in my pride, in my flesh, I'm like, Mom, that was me. Like, what do you mean? Like, it's like, that wasn't the Lord. It's like, that was me. But it's like my mom and dad having healthy rhythms in their life of constantly telling us, look, Evan, we tithed during this time when we didn't have any money and the Lord had stayed faithful. There are times when your dad was out of a job for years and I had to work and the Lord somehow provided time and time and time again. It's story after story after story of my parents raising up us in the faithfulness of God. And now me and my two siblings are people of great faith because we have parents who taught us stories of a God who's faithful. And so I think that's one of the biggest things that as a parent you can do is the people with the best stories are the ones who win. So if the world's telling great stories, we need to tell greater because our God's greater.
That's such a good reminder. Well, let's end it here. Maybe for the person that's listening that really desires a mentor, but either doesn't know who to look for, who to ask, or maybe they just don't feel like they have anyone near them to mentor them for whatever reason. What's some encouragement that you would give them?
Yeah, I would say just find somebody who loves Jesus, who's been following Jesus longer than you and is doing what you want to do, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so if you're like, hey, maybe you go, hey, I really think I want to be a lawyer, but I want to be a lawyer who loves Jesus. I want to be a missionary in the marketplace. Well, hey, ask the Lord to show you someone, whether it's in your church or in a family circle or neighbor or something that practices law and loves Jesus and just go, can I learn from you? And just go, I want to do what you're doing. Can I learn from you? So find somebody who's passionate about the things you're passionate about and loves Jesus and ask them if you can get to know them and learn from them.
Yeah. And I'll give a super quick hack really quick. Someone taught me this and it has worked literally. Like I think I'm batting 1,000 right now with what this person set me up with. So he goes, every single person in the Christian walk has some sort of, for lack of better terms, superpower. So it's like a spiritual gift that they have that they're probably better at than most people in the Christian walk. For some, it's evangelism. Some, for some people, it's leadership and systems and processes. For other people, it's compassion. For other people, it's patience. Like literally whatever it is, there's always something that someone is probably, they are put on this earth with a gift set that another part of the body maybe doesn't have. And so the hack of all hacks, this is what not to do when you walk up to someone, say, hey, will you mentor me? Because one, the first thing they're thinking is, I don't have time for that. I have no idea what that means. Mm-hmm. I don't even have the capacity to do that. I kind of doubt my own gifting. I don't know if I can do that, right? Mm-hmm. And so what my mentor said, it has worked every single time, is you think of a person, you think of something you need to grow in. So if that's spiritual formation, you're like, I need to walk deeper with Jesus. I need to walk in deeper sanctification with Jesus. Who do I know that is great at spiritual formation? Someone that I know in my church, in my community, maybe even at my workplace. And then you go, okay, I have that person. Have 3 questions prepared already written down. Have 4 to 5 dates that you're available with times. And you approach the person. And this is what you say. Hey, blank, I believe the Lord has gifted you tremendously in blank. Do you mind if I take 30 minutes of your time? I have these 3 questions prepared. Coffee or dinner or lunch is on me. These are the 5 dates I have available. Do any of those work for you? If not, I'll work around your schedule. And then let them answer, because it's right, super clear, super easy to respond to. And oftentimes when you lead with that much organization, the person who's that high capacity leader that Paul is talking about is going to be like, I'll give you all the time you need, because you're obviously hungry and you're well organized and you're passionate. And you start with some flattery too. You think I'm gifted at something, which is true. They're usually pretty gifted at that thing you're reaching out to.
Right.
And so that's the biggest blessing I can give you when it comes to, say, if you're struggling trying to stick with a mentor, because that doesn't even start with mentorship. You never once labeled it mentorship, discipleship, but oftentimes after that, that's where that mutual bond starts to grow. That one meeting that you asked for usually goes to 2, which goes to 3. And then you look up 3 months down the road and that's a mentor of yours.
Yes. Mm, oh, great. That's so good. And yeah, I love that. And I would want to speak to the leaders that are listening, that maybe they've been around a while or they're successful at what they do. Those are the ones where sometimes the people that have that level of success or been around a little while, there's a next level that you can reach in your own life and leadership that you may not even know about right now. And a verse I've been thinking about is Proverbs 12:15. It says, a fool thinks he needs no advice, but a wise person listens to others. And so I think there's a certain point that we need to be actively, prayerfully considering, what areas do I need to grow in? And what are some other people that we can be pursuing? Like Evan was just gave a really good outline for that. But man, I think if you reach to the point where you think you don't need a mentor, that's a very dangerous place to be. I want to say as a warning to all of us. And so that we constantly need to be growing and thinking about who can we learn from and how can we put ourselves in that place of teachability, because God really honors that. God honors humility, teachability. And if we put ourselves in that place, he's going to give us what we need and bring the right people in our lives when we need it. So
love it. So good.
That's such a good reminder. This has been such a good conversation. We hope it's been helpful to you, maybe a little convicting, maybe encouraging. We hope it's been whatever you needed. We're excited again. Like we've mentioned in the last episode, we've got some exciting guests coming on and we loved getting to have Evan on. We are, I think when this releases, we'll be in the middle of the Youth Leader Coaching Network. And so that is just an incredible, it's not one-on-one mentorship, but it is an incredible way just to meet people, collaborate with people. Shane helps lead that and he even brings in some other voices. And so that is a great thing to point. If you have a youth minister, you know somebody who's looking to just grow, that's a great thing to point people to. And then the Collegiate Coaching Network will kick off in September. Is that correct? End of September, mm-hmm. Paul? Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. And so very similar. And those are online. So it doesn't matter where you are, you can join those. And then there's one in-person gathering that is really, honestly, one of our favorite things that we get to do. I love, and it's so fun to just get to connect with people in person and talk to so many of you. And so we'll include all of that in the show notes. Keep an eye out for those things in the future. Again, you can follow us at Jensen on all social media. We'll make sure to post about when those things kick off and when registration opens for those. Next episode that we're super interested and excited about, we're going to be talking about the forgotten disciplines. And so we're going to be diving into a little bit of some things, maybe some spiritual disciplines that maybe we don't teach as well in student and collegiate ministry, or maybe things that we just don't that we've kind of forgotten just in our culture and day and age. So we're excited to dive into those, and we'll see you guys next time.